Hello and welcome, Dr. Angel D. Thank you so much for joining us for today's episode of the Discerning Parenting Podcast. So Dr. Angel D is a medical doctor and she is an early childhood development advocate for over 10 years. She graduated from the Ateneo School of Medicine and Public Health with her degree in medicine and her MBA, and she completed postgraduate studies from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine and the UC Davis Mind Institute. And she is an assistant professor at the Ateneo School of Medicine and Public Health. And she is also the assistant head of the Mental Health Sciences Flagship Programs. And she is a certified trainer under 0-3 for the Growing Brain Curriculum. And she is a provider of several interventions that will help young kids in their development. She's published several academic journal articles, including the one about screen time that we'll be talking about today. And she's also written neuroscience and research-informed parenting materials. And if you're following the parenting space, you may know her as the Growing Brain PH. She's the founder of Growing Brain PH, and she advocates for early intervention, infant and toddler mental health, and supporting the parent-child dyad for optimizing growth and development during the early years. So, Dr. Angel, it's so wonderful to have you here today. I know that you have a very busy schedule, and this is something we've been wanting to do for months. So, finally, you're here.
Hi, Dr. Toyang. I'm honored to be invited to be here and to share what might be helpful to the community.
Yeah. So could you tell us more about your research about screen time?
Yeah. Well, maybe I can start off by letting you know why I did it.
Yeah.
Because I think when the study was conducted in 2021, so it's smack dab in the middle of the ongoing pandemic. And when we were doing screening in the clinic, I would get a lot of parents who were concerned about language development. It was very specific, language development and social skills of their children. And because as medical doctors, we tend to ask a lot of history, medical history, developmental history, what's going on at home. And the first things that they'll really tell me, and they know this, parents are very aware, "Doc, I think it's because we do a lot of screen time." Right? They'll outright say it's screen time. They'll let you know all the shows that they've watched. And I think part of the reason why they do that is because they're trying to find out, am I watching, am I letting them watch the right things? Because as you mentioned, some parents really feel that gadgets teach our children. And they're not 100% wrong. But it made me curious how much of that effect was happening in our kids during the pandemic time because of the restrictions. We literally told the parents that they cannot take their kids out. Yes. And so they had no other choice. They had no other choice but to think of things that would happen within the home. And so that kind of triggered doing the study. So the study then targeted 2 to 3 year old children because that was the age group. And because it's also the age group I see in clinic and just wanting to see what are their skills, and not just language, social skills, play skills, interpersonal relationship skills. Those became the targets of the study that we conducted.
Wow, that is so interesting. So I know if you're listening to this episode, you're excited to find out what were the findings of this research. So you told us already who were the ones who joined. So these were those who were 2 and 3 years old, right in the middle of the pandemic. And these were kids who tended to be stuck at home, so they may have had more exposure and screen time. So could you tell me, what were the findings about the research?
Yeah, it was so interesting because we really just wanted to get about 280 kids that, in a statistics standpoint, so that the research has sense and meaning to the scientific world, 280 was what was required. We actually got an overwhelming response of 400. Plus, so about 419 kids. So one of the things we wanted to see is how many kids were able to follow the recommendations of our pediatricians, which is no more than 1 hour a day for that age group. And oh my goodness, Dr. Toyang, we couldn't get enough because yeah. It didn't even reach 100. Only 99 kids of the 419 could do 1 hour or less. everyone else was doing more than that. And so that made me curious, oh my goodness, am I going to see like crazy results? And so what we did notice, there is a lot of findings, but in terms of development, we were able to account for drops in language development in children who were watching more than 2 hours of screen time, right? So 2 hours became the mark where we would see a drop. Like you, when you look at a graph, you sometimes you'll see a graph and you'll see, okay, it's in the average. And then you see it dip. You literally notice that both expressive, meaning what they can say, express, and that's through gestures, through words, and what they receive or receptive language, what they understood, both went down. And so, and this is over 400 kids, so it's not just a fluke, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's true.
It's one of the major findings that, which provides evidence to what our pediatricians are trying to express to our kids, to our parents, to try to limit the amount of screen that we give to our kids.
Yeah, so that's very interesting. Now, sometimes when somebody shares research findings like this one, like there is a drop in language skills at a certain point when you give beyond a certain amount of screen time, there are people who are going to protest something like, oh, it wasn't an experiment. But you know what, Dr. Angel, I don't think we'll really be able to conduct an experiment. Like, can you actually tell, you know, divide these parents into two groups and then tell them, okay, you give your kids 2 hours of screen time, you give your kids 3 hours of screen time. You know, we can't do that. So what you do is you statistically control for them. You use statistics to control for these other confounding factors. So yeah, that means if you saw that drop and you said it was really a significant drop, it was a statistically significant drop, then there really is a correlation. There really is an association between excess screen time and the drop in language skills.
Yeah, and maybe I get really excited about talking about numbers, but that's the nerd side of me. But I think maybe to support our families who may be listening about it, is I can see and understand how difficult it is to stick to the 2 hour limit or the 1 hour limit even. Part of what we tried to do, or I tried to incorporate into the research study, was to try to understand where it was coming from. So not just the numbers and knowing that the language dropped, I think it was also nice because part of the research was trying to understand the perceptions of the family members on why they were using certain screens. And one of the things that I thought was nice to see was parents are aware that there are difficult behaviors when their children are using the screen. Like there was about 60 to 70% of parents who said, yes, my child did have difficult behaviors. But on the flip side, parents do recognize that there are some screens that can be educational. So there's another 50 to 60%, depending on it. Some will say language, some will say mathematics, some will say reading. And these are skills they're trying to get their children to learn. But it adds on to, sometimes it's because it's also what is told to them. I think that's one of the things that I kind of want to point out also, that I think our parents need to educate themselves also on how to choose the right materials that match their goal for their child. So what I took away from those numbers was these parents have good intentions. They want their child to learn. They had a goal. Mom or dad will not want their child to be able to read or do math early if they could, if a game told them that the child would be able to. And so sometimes it's being educated in that regard, that perhaps letters and numbers isn't the way to read for a child who's 2 years old.
Yes, and so, exactly. In early childhood, it's really all about interactive communication and not about memorizing letters and numbers and shapes, which if we look at YouTube or screen time, you really see the titles like help your child learn this, help your child learn that. So as a parent, you're going to see that. You're going to see, say, oh, I want that for my child. So there's some pressure on parents to give their kids the screen time. I remember I actually get a lot of parents who would tell me something like, I wanted my child to learn early on. So when he was a baby, maybe 6 or 8 or 12 months, I gave him the screen so that he's going to learn. And actually, at first, he didn't want to. He preferred crawling around, overlooking at that screen. But eventually, he became more and more attached. Until now, it's difficult to get him off. I hear that story time and again. So if you're a parent listening to this and you have a 6 or an 8 month old who hasn't been exposed to screen time, and you're feeling the pressure around you, people are saying, how are they going to learn? They're going to be behind. Well, this episode is going to give you the confidence that no, your child is not going to be behind. And there is research evidence for it. So Dr. Angel, can you also tell us, in your research, you also looked into the effects on other skills as well, not just language skills. Could you also tell us about the other effects of screen time?
Yeah, so there were three other domains that we looked at. In the paper, it calls it personal skills, interpersonal relationship, and play and leisure. So those three, I wanted to look into them because personal skills mean what can you do for yourself? Your activities of daily living. Can you eat on your own? Do you toilet on your own? Do you still wear a diaper and so on?
Yeah, and this is also a huge concern for parents. Yeah, I always hear, I want my child to be more independent. And it's also a huge load off a parent's work if their kids are able to do these things for themselves.
Yeah. And then so there's that one, right? The individual skills. And then there's interpersonal relationship, meaning how do you develop friends? How do you interact with somebody else or the parent, which is what they're supposed to be doing in the first couple of years before they have peers? And then the last one is play and leisure, but it's not about how do you play with a toy, which is, I think, what I'd like to highlight. When we look at children, screen and evaluate them, we're actually not looking at how well they use a toy, especially for the younger age. So if some of your listeners may have even joined this study, if they recall answering the questions there, it was about how do you play with another person? So it's a lot of it is about interpersonal relationships. And so you asked about the findings. The findings show that the skills level for these three also drop, but not until the child is excessively using screen time for 4 to 5 hours. But I think more than that, it makes sense, right? If you're spending 4 to 5 hours of most likely a 12-hour waking time, you have much less time to learn the skills that take several repetitions to learn. Pulling up and down your pants has to happen several times before you understand that this is how far or how hard I have to pull or push it so that it covers my butt, right? So there's that kind of skill, or just getting a spoon, being able to scoop and putting it in our mouths. If, let's say, I know this wasn't a question in the study, but a lot of people will use the screen to pacify a child so that they can be fed a lot easier. And not to judge anyone, but it kind of tells you that the child therefore doesn't learn to pick up a spoon, scoop, and put it in their mouths. And there are several reasons for it. Our parents are busy. During the pandemic, people were working from home. Even now, you're no longer in the pandemic. You want to finish a little faster and you kind of want them to be a little bit more neat. And I think that's cultural for us. We don't like messy. But children don't learn to become clean until they are done being messy. So again, it comes from repetition and work. And so if we have continuous exposure to screen or using screen to pacify so that you can get more bites in and faster, or they don't notice that they've eaten two bowls of food because we like to feed our kids a lot, then they don't learn the skills that make them more independent as well.
That is so true, Dr. Angel. And this age is the critical time for brain development, the first 2 or 3 years of life. That is when the brain connections are going to form. And this has also been shown in other research that if they are deprived of this interactive communication, human interaction, because they're supposed to be interacting with other people at this time. Mm-hmm. And that is how the social brain forms. That is how they learn to regulate. That is how they learn interactive communication. That is how they learn how to use language in everyday life by interacting with other people. And if they miss this crucial period, it's going to be very difficult for them to catch up later on. And that's what we always tell parents. During the early years, your priority is really to learn social interaction, because memorizing the numbers, memorizing the letters, all of that can come later on. If your child doesn't learn it in the first 3 years of life, later on, they're going to learn it. So all those things that they're supposed to learn, quote unquote, in the educational videos, if you wait until they're older before they learn it, they will still learn it. But if they miss this time interacting with other people because we gave them the screens, then we're never going to get that time back. And I think that is what your study shows and other research like it also.
Yeah, and I like how you highlight about the educational videos, because there are several studies like those of Radesky. These are researchers who really try to understand how infants, toddlers understand the use of screen media. And I really appreciated one of the studies that they did was they went through the App Store, the Google Play and the App Store, and they tried to review the materials that were there. Because some parents will try to use those as a guide, right? It'll say there it's for baby learning, for infant learning. And out of the top 100 that they saw was being downloaded, I think not more than 10% were even appropriate for children.
Exactly.
For that age. So I go back to, I don't know if anybody who's in marketing is hearing this, but it also speaks to those who create the materials. Because our parents are drawn to the marketing or the appeal of the learning activity. And so if when you look up the top 100 and the first 80 tell you ABCs.
Yes, parents are going to think that you need ABCs at 1 and 2 years old. Exactly, yeah. Dr. Angel. And that is why we're here at the Discerning Parenting Podcast. Being a discerning parent is about knowing how to make decisions that are right for you and your family and your child as a parent. So I hope that listening to this, it will help make us more discerning, because I understand for parents, the pressure is all around us. And I know it pops up all the time on my Facebook feed. I always see all these apps that will say, make your baby smarter, make your toddler smarter, get this app, and then your toddler will learn to read in 30 days. And parents do get pressured by these things, and they're not even developmentally appropriate, and they're not even, they will say that they're backed by research. And sometimes we actually click on them. Either I don't see the research, or what does the research say? The research will say the first 3 years are critical for brain development. That's the only research that they say. But that is not how to make the most out of the first 3 years. So it's a very misleading use of research. What tips do you have for parents, especially for busy parents where sometimes we do really need the gadgets to help us, maybe to give us a chance to cook dinner or to do some, finish some of our own work? Any advice that you saw helped the parents in your research?
Well, I think the number one takeaway is it's actually letting us know that it doesn't have to be zero. The use of screen time doesn't have to be zero. So maybe I'll go first with the recommendation of our pediatricians. Both AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and PPS, the Philippine Pediatric Society, which recommends no more than an hour. The research does say, too, is where the language drops off. And knowing that majority of our parents don't even make it to the 1 hour, I think the 1 to 2 hours is a safe enough number to follow in terms of screen time. So if we're talking about needing it to maybe go to the bathroom, maybe getting your house cleaned, perhaps getting that into smaller chunks of time for the screen as the distraction, that should be okay. As an advocate for
these would be for kids who are around 2 years and up, because below 18 months they really recommend, this is when the recommendation is for zero screen time. And then for 18 months to 2 years, then maybe there can be some amount of screen time that is carefully selected and that you watch together with them. And there is research evidence for these recommendations, which I talk about in my two books, one about toddler talking and another about toddler behavior, which we will link to in the show notes. And of course, we'll also link to Dr. Angel's research in the show notes.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out, because just remember that the research was for 2 to 3 years old.
Yes.
And the 2 years below, so 18 to 2 years old, actually they were just encouraging video calls. So encouragement of video calls is just highlights the social interaction of that use of that gadget for that younger age group. And so maybe to as an addendum to the 2 hours that you do watch, the best way is also to co-view. And it's not something we've talked about yet, but co-viewing actually made language skills better than those who didn't co-view. And when we say co-view, what does that mean? It's literally having someone watching with you, so that it's not passive watching. It's actually having someone who may explain, may add on to what they heard. Or what I'm thinking about is those shows like Dora the Explorer, who will ask a question. And then I'm imagining a parent having their child respond, or helping the child have a response to the question.
Yeah.
So it becomes a more interactive show. So that goes beyond the scope of the research study, but just coming from our field of work, I think it's more than just knowing the number or amount of time that you watch the screen, it's how they watch the screen. And then one of the things that I advise patients in the clinic is that maybe you can break up the 2 hours rather than sitting 2 hours straight. Because that does affect brain development, and that's chemicals in the brain. And that could be a whole different conversation.
Yeah.
Maybe it can be in smaller chunks, 15 minutes at a time, so that you're not just sitting and staring in the screen for long periods, because that's also not how children will learn. They may look like they're being well-behaved and have good attention, but that's not attention. That's almost, what do we call this? An addiction. That they can't get away from it, so that they just kind of stare and you can't even call their names. And so that's a problem. If you're seeing that with your child who's watching, that is already a problem. So that might signify that you need to lessen the amount of time that you're allowing your kids to watch. And so Dr. Doyle, you mentioned earlier about discerning. You also need to be able to discern what is a good enough time for your child. So if you're a parent who notices that your child misbehaves with too much screen use already, I will not wait for 2 hours just because Dr. Angel said 2 hours is okay, right? Maybe my child is on the 1 hour, maybe even 30 minutes. And so we got to discern for our child's individual difference.
Yeah, and we do see that, Dr. Angel. We do see kids that with just one episode of a 20-minute show, there's really something different already about their behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's being curious. I like to call it that. Being curious of how your child might be reacting or behaving based on the show, and not just relying that the show is of good quality. It also needs to match the quality. The quality needs to match the learning style of your child. And of course, they're two. So that learning style will continue to change. So we have to continue to learn what they're able to do as well. And which is why, if you'll notice, the recommendations for screen time actually changes also as kids get older, right? So after 5, that actually shifts, that you don't have to co-view with them forever, right? We don't co-view anymore unless we're doing family movie nights and such.
Yeah. Because especially in early childhood, they really have a hard time learning from screens. I mean, they can learn, like they see one cartoon character pushing another. They can certainly imitate that action. But if you're looking at what you want them to learn from an educational video, it's going to be a huge challenge if we do not help them translate what they see to the everyday world. And when you're growing brain advocacy, I know you also advocate a lot of play and screen-free activities. So could you tell us more about that too, as an alternative to screen time?
Actually, my favorite recommendation for families, I literally write it on a prescription. Play with your child 6 to 8 times a day for 10 to 15 minutes each time. If you break
that down. That is a very nice prescription. And that is actually what is recommended to pediatricians already. the American Academy of Pediatrics went out and said, pediatricians, you need to prescribe play to your parents because our kids just don't get enough interactive play. That's play with somebody else. They may not get enough active play and movement also. So that's a wonderful prescription, Dr. Angel.
Yeah, and it's science back. So you mentioned before, I'm actually a DIR professional, meaning we advocate and teach and help families on what does it mean to be interactive play. And in that advocacy, we actually need the 6 to 8 times, if it's not yet being done, to happen, because unlike before, we had big families, we had kids who just had many exposures, social exposures. And if they didn't get it, we try to introduce it more purposively by saying the 6 to 8 times. And notice that we don't say that it has to be very long. So if 10 to 15 or even up to 20 minutes, because their child's attention isn't going to be that long either. And so if your interactive play can be in the form of, I'm just going to be playful with you as we eat during meal times, where we're trying to feed you, choosing the food, being playful. Which one do you want to eat? Or is that yummy? Is that sticky? Oh, ew, that one is so soft. And depending on how you want to have a conversation, that's playful already. So if you're eating 3 times a day, 3 of the 6 is already out. You just need to think about 3 to 4 more activities that you can be doing together that is playful and interactive as well.
Yeah, that's wonderful, Dr. Angel. Thank you for bringing that up. And thank you for showing our listeners that play doesn't have to be so complicated. Because if you look at the internet, it feels like play has become really complicated. Like you have to have all of these materials, you have to follow all of these steps. And I feel that a lot of them may have to do with marketing also, just like the apps. Mm-hmm. And that's why play has gotten so complicated, when actually all you need is a parent and the child and that connection and that interaction. So Dr. Angel, where can parents go if they want to find out more about you and your work and your advocacy, and also more tips? I know you have a lot of wonderful tips for parents.
Yeah, well, I do have my social media pages. So as you mentioned, it's the Growing Brain PH. It has an equivalent website. I do manage them myself, so they are updated based on my availability to update them. But it's really been an advocacy to basically share with others what I've seen has been a concern with other parents. So if you'd like to read articles, or if you'd like to look at posts that are there, you can certainly visit the social media pages. So on Facebook, on Instagram, even on YouTube on occasion, I'm there. And then the website, of course. And if you would like to have a consultation, that's also an availability to parents. So I do parent coaching. I'm working with other clinicians to get them to also be more skilled in terms of helping our families. So that is something that the Growing Brain PH is trying to advocate for. So beyond me being behind the page, I actually have a team of clinicians who are helping me with this advocacy as well.
Wow, that's wonderful, Dr. Angel, and that's really very much needed. And if you want to learn more about screen time and how it affects language development and behavior, and what we can do about it as parents, you check out also my books, Toddler Talking, Boost Your Child's Language and Brain Development in 3 Easy Steps, and my newer book, The Discerning Parent's Guide to Toddler Behavior from Power Struggles to Connection. And in both of those books, I included a chapter that reviewed the evidence about screen time. And in fact, the book about toddler behavior includes also Dr. Angel's research, and it also has practical tips for parents, which include a lot of the things that we said today, as well as other tips to help you if you want to. For example, how do you choose screen media for your child? And it's not the top results in YouTube. It can be very far from the top results. And also how we can manage screen time as busy parents. So we'll link to the books in the show notes, and you also check out our website, discerningparenting.com. So thank you so much, Dr. Angel. Any last words for our parents before we end the episode?
I just have to agree with being able to discern, because in terms of screen media, not all screen media is created equal, but we can equip ourselves to be able to make good choices, because I know our parents are good intentioned as well. Thank you for listening, and thank you for having me, Dr. Doyang.
Thank you, Dr. Angel. Thank you to everyone who has listened. So feel free to share this episode to other people. Maybe you want to share them with other parents, or if there are people who are trying to decide about screen media and to discern how to best use screen media for their kids, feel free to share this episode with them. So thank you so much, and we'll see you again on the next episode of the Discerning Parenting Podcast, where it's our mission to help you discern how to make good parenting decisions. Bye!